All right, today I have the pleasure of being joined by another Boston legend, another week, another Boston legend. I am joined today by Cliff Gideon. He is a good friend of mine from high school. He was my former high school baseball teammate. He was a student manager for the baseball team, won a championship in high school with me as well. He was more on the team than any player that was on that roster. Cliff Gideon, an absolute pleasure being able to have you on the podcast today. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good today, Joey. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Great to have you. Going to talk some Boston sports, obviously. The Patriots are playing great football this year. The Celtics have looked really good as well. So we'll talk about each of those teams and then talk some high school baseball as well. But Cliff, thank you so much, my friend. It's great having you on today. Looking forward to chatting with you. We'll start off with the Patriots, 14-3 season. I definitely didn't see this coming. On your end, from a Patriots fan's perspective, did you see a 14-3 season coming?
Honestly, no. I thought we were going to break even this season. Drake May being in his second season, I was like, all right, semi-rookie, semi-not a rookie, but like, he doesn't really have, like, I didn't think he had what he took, but hey, he proved us all wrong this year. He's in second running for MVP and wow. All I can say is wow. Cause this team has gone through it since our last Super Bowl. So like, knowing that now we're in our rebuild for sure with our new coach, new QB, new wide receivers, new everything, honestly. Like, I don't think we have, honestly, one player from our last championship team still here. So it's good to see a new team and, like, see what they're capable of.
Yeah, it was a huge rebuild, right? 2 full years of a rebuild where the Patriots, you know, had 5 or less wins. I think they had 4 in 2 straight seasons. And then this year, get a new coach and obviously build better around Drake May. And you see what they're capable of. When you look at Drake May right now, and if it's all based on the regular season, like the voters say it is, do you think Drake May should be the NFL MVP?
I do. My number 10 guy, Drake May. Yeah, that guy should definitely be MVP this season. Matthew Stafford's doing good himself, but, you know, I don't see Drake May throwing like 4 pick-sixes in one game, so.
Yeah, no, May was great this year. I think the most surprising thing about Drake May is how much he elevated the guys around him, right? You look at Kayshon Booty, right? A guy that was, you know, showed some talent, especially in college, was a big high school recruit, stepped in the NFL and showed, you know, promise, right? Showed potential. And then this year with Drake May, really blossomed, 6 touchdowns. Like Drake May elevated his game. Elevated all the guys around him. It's not just, you know, Booty. You look at Pop Douglas. He had a really good year. Stephon Diggs, a player that a lot of people were down on heading into the year, played very well this season. You look at Hunter Henry, a guy that's getting up there in age, but still very productive with Drake May. Drake May did elevate all the guys around him. I do think it's going to end up going to Matt Stafford just based off of the people that are voting are probably going to factor in the strength of schedule, which it's not a problem on Drake May's end. Like, it's not Drake May's fault. He doesn't pick and choose who he plays. But I feel like they're going to, you know, factor that in. And that's why I think they'll give it to Stafford. But Drake May, no matter what, whether he wins it or he doesn't, obviously the Patriots have their franchise quarterback. And I think that's, you know, most important at the end of the day. When you look at this Patriots team, obviously Drake May was, I'd say, the most surprising player this year, took a huge step. Besides Drake May, who do you think has really surprised you this year and really stood out as, let's say, the most underrated player in the Patriots?
I don't know. I'd like to say Gonzo, honestly. Gonzo and the defense they've definitely been doing their job, to be honest. Kyle Lovin chasing 2 weeks ago against, the Ravens. That was a big, like, big, big, huge play. Like, we could have lost that game once Zay Flowers caught the ball. He could have kept his head down, kept running. But sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name.
You got it.
But, you know, he just came out of nowhere, poked the ball out, and didn't give up. So I want to shout out the defense. And it's like you said, Stephon Diggs, after having a, like, torn ACL, like, came out of nowhere. And last night just got his 1,000 yards. So that was huge.
Yeah, I think you said it best. The defense, I think, should get more, you know, praise as well, which Drake May definitely deserves praise. But the defense has played really well, too, right? You're looking at a team that always had talent on defense, but they had injuries over the years. Sometimes, you know, guys just underperformed. This year, they just have a lot of guys that are playing very well. And there's not necessarily just one guy in that defense that stands out besides Gonzalez at the cornerback position. Besides that, like, every other player does their job. They may not stand out more than, you know, Drake May does on offense. But I think one player that doesn't really get as much, you know, respect right now, doesn't get talked about as much, as Harold Landry, a guy that, you know, is a free agent signing for the Patriots, a guy that obviously had some experience with Mike Vrabel. And I think he's really exceeded that smaller contract he got this offseason. It wasn't, you know, a big time payday that he got, you know, a few years ago in Tennessee. A little bit smaller of a contract. See if he can stay healthy. See if he can be productive. And he's been that this year. He's been very good for the Patriots. You know, in the snaps, he's been out there. He's played, I think, just about every single game as well. So he stayed healthy, which is huge. And then you look at the offensive side of the ball. The Patriots have ran the ball very well, right? You got Henderson, who's been very good. Stevenson's been better, you know, not fumbling and stuff. When you look at each of those backs, who do you think is the better one? Who do you want to be? Which it seems like Henderson's that lead guy, and he's gotten more, you know, more and more snaps the last half of the season. But who would you say is your lead guy? Big situation, Patriots need, you know, third and one. They need to get this play. Who's your guy you go to?
You know, Joey, I'm going to be biased because I'm a Buckeye fan. I'm going to have to say my guy, Travion Henderson. Honestly, like him coming from the national championship last year, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to do it this year. But him coming off last year, just like what I've seen him do since he's like been in a Patriot jersey, honestly, is like unbelievable, like unmatched. Like we can throw him in, we can throw in Stevenson. Like they're both going to get us yards, and I like having both of them. But third and one, give me Travion Henderson.
Yeah, he's been awesome. And you said it best, right? A guy that had a lot of success in college at Ohio State. Now you're looking now at the Patriots, and he's been very good this year, you know, getting more and more carries, more and more experience, more and more comfortable as time has gone on. Which team, when you look at this AFC, is there one specific team that you fear the most for the Patriots, right? Is there one team which, in my eyes, if I'm picking for the Patriots, I think Jacksonville is going to end up being the toughest team, you know, to beat. Even though the Patriots can beat any team, it's a wide open AFC, right? I think Jacksonville will be the toughest test for any team in the AFC just because they're playing great football the last eight or so games. Is there a team that you would say the Patriots, you know, would have a tough time with? One team that you think would stand out most in the AFC? All right, so like I said, who do you, would you say is the toughest test for the Patriots in the AFC?
I'd have to agree with you. Like you said, Jacksonville's definitely playing well in the last couple of games. Surprisingly, especially without their number one pick, Travis Hunter, I thought they were going to be like, hey, it's time to tank. Like, we're done. Our guy that we had on both offensive and defense is, like, now not here. Like, we thought he was going to be our best player. But, hey. Like you said, Jacksonville is actually like showing out. I'd like to say Denver too, but like Jacksonville is definitely like one of those teams that like back then you'd be like, oh, we're beating them by like 40, 50. But like now they're actually like with a crazy quarterback from Clemson. Like Trevor Lawrence is also a quarterback that I would have wanted to have an MVP conversation, but maybe next year, honestly.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I think Jacksonville, they have a quarterback in Trevor Lawrence that's really excelled, right? Especially in the, you know, latter half of the season. The second half has been awesome. I know the first, you know, six, maybe eight games wasn't really his best. He had some turnover issues that have been, you know, apparent over the last few years. But you look at the last 10 games or so, he's been playing excellent football, making crazy passes every single week. And I think you also look at that defense. They're clicking at the right time as well. And I feel like a lot of the time teams, you know, get overlooked. I feel like they're getting overlooked a little bit. And I understand why, right? The Patriots had a great season. The Broncos had a great season. So I understand why, you know, it's not necessarily like they're, you know, the favorite of the AFC. They're not like everyone's, you know, thinking they're going to win at all. And that's probably why they're not getting as much, you know, respect and talked about, because everyone's focused on the Patriots and the Broncos, which I get, and the Bills as well. The Bills, you know, get a lot of attention. But I think this Jacksonville team's a little bit under the radar right now. And like you said, Trevor's been awesome. And the way that they've played defense, everything's clicking at the right time. And I don't want to bring up the Giants, but it's reminiscent of, you know, some of those Giants runs where they click at the right time. The offense is playing well at the same time as the defense is, and they're getting hot, you know, in the last half of the season. When you look at this matchup with the Chargers, though, the Chargers are a team that they've had some really good moments this year and then, you know, have had some moments where they struggled, right? They lost to the Giants this season. Just like Denver, they should have lost to the Giants, but they beat the Giants. You look at that, this Chargers team, how do you think the Patriots match up with them? Which the Chargers are a good team, right? But the Patriots having home field advantage and obviously being a healthy team for the most part heading to the playoffs, everyone, you know, for the most part expects Patriots to win this game. But how do you think they match up with the Chargers in this one?
Honestly, I just hope they put all gas, no brakes. It's like our motto over here in New England. We all we got, we all we need. So as long as they rely on each other, don't put their head down right away. Like we can have a couple turnovers. It's fine. But like as long as we keep our heads high and we like fix those mistakes, I think we should be good. Like the Chargers surprisingly didn't play Herbert last night and they let Trey Lance do his job. So
try to keep it healthy.
Yeah. We saw how that went against Denver. Like, hopefully the score is not the same. Hopefully it's closer, but I want the Patriots on this one. I need
Of
my
course.
hometown.
I mean, that's your team, right? Which I get, and they've obviously had a great season. And I think the Chargers, I think it'll be a good game, right? They're two good teams, well coached, right? Harbaugh's a very good coach on LA side. Vrabel's great, you know, on the Patriots side. So it'll be a good game. Two experienced coaches, two young quarterbacks, right? Herbert's got more experience. You know, he's been in the league a few more years than May, but two up and coming quarterbacks that are really starting to sprout, you know, over the last year or so. Herbert is a guy that I was critical of, you know, for the first couple seasons of his career, which I always thought he was good, always thought he was talented. I just, you know, always felt like he never put it all together, especially in the playoffs. This is a big opportunity for him, right? You're going up against a very good team, you know, in the Patriots, at the Patriots. You're on the road. This is a big test for Justin Herbert. When you look at this Patriots defense, what do you think is going to be the key to this success? Getting pressure on Justin Herbert, maybe forcing some three and outs. It could be potentially, you know, getting an interception. What would you say is the key to the Patriots' success on defense in this one against a good Chargers offense?
Like you said, we definitely have to get to Herbert, get a couple three and outs. Hey, if we're lucky we get a pick, we'll take it as long as it's not a pass interference called back. But, yeah, our defense just, they've been working. The gears have been churning. Like the fact that we've only lost three games this year, that actually surprises me. It's like we talked about earlier, a whole new defense, like whole new defense, whole new coaching staff, like, these guys are new to everything. They're just looking at this new coach that they're getting and being like, all right, I'm putting my like onions in a basket to you, like that you make me the best player I can be. And the coaches have been doing it. So as long as the defense studies film this week, they get well rested, healthy, fix the injuries they have, we should be good.
Yeah, I think you said it best, right? I think the Patriots, when you look at this team and the way they've played defense all year, they've been very well coached. They've done their job, right? Whether it's getting to the quarterback at times, getting turnovers, which this isn't even necessarily on the defensive side, but they're scoring touchdowns, not just on offense. You look at what they've done on special teams this year, right? A very dangerous return on Marcus Jones, right? So they find ways to put their offense in a position to score and be in, you know, a position to, you know, keep the lead, keep the ball, and obviously keep the other team's defense, you know, on the field so that they're tired and then the offense can control the game. And that's what the defense has done all year, right? Giving the Patriots offense opportunities to get the ball in good field position, get the ball with the chance to score, you know, get the ball, you know, late in games so that they can go down and try to win. Like you saw in that Ravens game, right? The defense had to work in that fourth quarter, like you said. You already noted it. Zay Flowers had some great plays, just like even last night. Zay had some terrific plays, you know, late in the fourth quarter in the last few games for the Ravens. And the Patriots defense found a way to come out, get a win, and, you know, get stops when they had to. You look at this Patriots offense, though. Who do you think is the most important player besides Drake May? Who would you say is the number one guy, you know, that's most important, let's say the X factor on offense heading into that game on Sunday night?
Again, I'm going to have to bring back my guy, Stephon Diggs. His leadership ever since he got here, like, you can see it in the pregame speeches. He's, like, getting the guys all together, being like, hey, this is what we got to do today. We'll get it done if we all stay together. Like, Stephon Diggs has honestly, like, without being here for a full year, he has honestly given, like, captain leadership and just telling the guys, like, hey, we may be down right now, but the time is not 0-0. So, like, as long as your foot is still on the gas, we don't give up, we communicate, we're good to go. And honestly, I like that we got him because, yes, Drake May can be a leader, but it's only year two. Hunter Henry can be a leader, but he's only been with us for a short amount of time. But, like, Diggs has played with many people. Like, he just knows how to relate to most people and getting the message across to them before the game, halftime, like during the game. Like sometimes I'll see the mic'd up of him talking to the team on the bench, like, hey, there's still time for us to improve. Don't give up. Don't like drop your head. Like, hey, we're only in the third quarter. We still have time. And just seeing that from him is like, wow, what more can I ask for in a player that just got to the team, that was just dealing with injuries last season on a different team, that like most of his fans now are just like, oh my God, like, you're still him. Like, he's still the same guy that he was when he was on the Vikings when he made that crazy touchdown. And it's like,
yeah.
years later, you wouldn't be thinking like, oh my God, he's still going to get his 1,000 yards. He's still going to do this, but like, he doesn't care the predicament or situation he's in. He's going to stay true to himself and like keep going.
Yeah. I think that's a really good pick because he's, like you said, a guy that's been on a lot of good teams, right? Over the years, you remember that Minneapolis miracle play you just mentioned, right? The Minneapolis miracle where he made that, you know, great catch on the sidelines against the Saints. And then you also, you know, bring up he was really good in Buffalo, was even good last year for the Texans, even, you know, with battling injuries. He's been on a lot of good teams over the years and has a lot of playoff experience. So I think that's a really good pick for a guy that's the X factor because he's been around a lot of good teams. He's been out there in a lot of big moments. You look at this Patriots team, you already noted it great at the beginning. No one's, you know, left from that Brady era that's still on the field playing, right? So you don't really have guys that have been there before and won. You got Milton Williams. He's won a Super Bowl, obviously. Carlton Davis has won a Super Bowl. And then after that, Stephon Diggs might be one of the most experienced players on that roster, right? That's played in big moments. Hunter Henry has been a very, you know, good player, a veteran over the years. He hasn't really been on a winning Patriots team that had a chance to potentially win a Super Bowl, right? But Diggs, over the last few years, has been on a lot of teams that could win a Super Bowl, right? Maybe, you know, this year ends up being the year he gets that done and hoists the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year. When you look at the NFL overall, right, we obviously talked the AFC, you know, the Patriots, we talked the Chargers. Looking across to the NFC, which team do you think stands out most? Who do you think has the best chance of winning the NFC?
I don't know. Like, it's kind of scary this year. Like, the Eagles aren't really doing their job, like, but at the same time, they can pull out anytime. Like, they're coached very well. They have a great quarterback, great wide receiver room. Like, I'm not gonna lie, they're good all around. Even though I hate the Eagles, they're good all around. Like, I could definitely see them, like, flipping it around. Like, they could definitely make a fat run.
Yeah, because they got the experience. Like you already noted about, you know, Diggs, guys that have been there before and have played in the playoffs. And whether or not they've won a Super Bowl, which most players in that Eagles team, you know, did return this year, so they all have a ring, or a lot of them, you know, have a ring under their belt. Having playoff experience is huge. Whether or not you're winning Super Bowls or not, having playoff experience is huge. And that's a team that, you know, has already won before and they kept kind of, you know, the core of guys that they needed to keep, you know, on that current roster. So I know they haven't really kind of clicked into gear just yet and been fully locked in, but that can happen. Hopefully, you know, for their sake, which I'm a Giants fan, so I'm not hoping they, you know, go on a run necessarily, but for their own sake, I'm sure they're hoping that, you know, things kind of turn and they kind of lock in at the right time. I think another team, the Rams, they really were underwhelming, right? The last couple games of the season, they didn't really show, which I know, you know, yesterday I'm not including, but the two games prior to that, they blew leads, you know, in the third and the fourth quarter, games that they should have won, they lost. Do you worry about that Rams team kind of struggling towards the end of the year heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, because it's like you said, like, how are we blowing leads? Like, come on, you have a great cushion already. You just keep doing what you were doing in the first half. You can finish the game off right. Like, that's what I feel bad for most teams this season. Like, they'll have a great cushion, i.e. the Patriots in the second time they played the Bills. Like, we were up 21-0 at one point, and out of nowhere, we just, like, let them come back and snip us in the butt. So I feel like most teams just need that, like, not the motivation factor, but just, like, hey, we were just up this amount of points. If we really think about it in our heads, and if we want to, we can think of the game as back to 0-0. And if we don't score, we're going into overtime. Mm-hmm. And, like, do we really want to go into overtime? No. Because for most places, if you're originally from the west side and you're coming to the east side, like, the time difference may be different for you. And you're going to be playing till, like, what? Maybe 11:30, 12, mm-hmm. depending on how long the game goes, especially yep. injury timeouts. Like, you have to accumulate all the time. So, like, it sucks for someone going from west to east coast because they're 3 hours behind and now they're dealing with a game that's would start for them if it's a Sunday night for them, it's 5 o'clock mm-hmm. ending at 8. But then for us, it's like an 8 o'clock, 8:25 ending at 11:30, 12, maybe the latest. Mm-hmm. And they're, dang, I am beat. I'm tired. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not used to this late night game on the east coast versus my west coast where I'm playing at 5 p.m. mm-hmm. and the sun's still out, and then when the game's over I'm still able to go out, versus coming to the east coast, you finish the game at 11, 12, what's still open? Mm-hmm. Nothing. You have to hop back on the bus. You're going home or you're going to the hotel and you're like, all right, time for bed until I have to leave the next morning.
Yeah, it's an adjustment for sure. And I think that's a great point, right? With the playoffs, home field advantage is huge, right? You get to wake up obviously at home, don't have, you know, as much travel. You don't have to really necessarily always stay in a hotel, which I know college, it's a little different where a lot of the time before games, they stay in a hotel. I'm not sure. I don't think the NFL does that. Seems like everybody obviously goes from home, you know, to the game when they're home. But I know in college, you know, they still stay overnight at a hotel, but the NFL, you don't really have that. You stay at home. You have that advantage. You can, you know, get up. You don't have the whole commute, you know, getting there on a plane, you know, the day before. I think you said it best too. Time is very important, right? You're looking at this Rams team. They're going to be flying all the way to Carolina. So you're flying across the country for this game. 4:25, I think it is on Saturday. So you're essentially playing at 1:25 PM, you know, at the probably a 5-6 hour flight, whatever it is, you know, all the way to North Carolina for them. It's a time change, and it's definitely a difference that you have to factor in. I think that's a very good point. I think also with that team too, they found ways to lose. They kind of hurt themselves, you know, late in those games, right? They were turning the ball over when they shouldn't be turning the ball over, and the defense couldn't get stops, so they needed to get a stop. They also had a couple tough calls against them, especially in that, I think it was a Thursday night game against the Seahawks, or it was a Monday night or Thursday night. It was a night game where they had that 2-point conversion, the Seahawks, that was supposed to be an incomplete pass. It ended up being, you know, I guess a lateral, they called it, and then the Seahawks recovered it and it counted as a conversion, right? So they had a couple.
It fell in the end zone and they said it was like a fumble. Yep, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. So there were a lot of, you know, some tough plays that didn't go their way, but then also you factor in they, you know, hurt themselves as well in some of those moments. But I agree with you. I think the way you play towards the end of the year is so important when you're going into the playoffs, because once you get to the playoffs, right, it's win or lose. Go, you know, win or go home. It's sudden death, right? You got to win those games. So it's not like when you're in the regular season, you have a tough game or two. It's not like, oh, we can just figure it out when we figure it out. Playoffs, you know, it's all, you know, win or go home, right? So that's what's really important. I think one team that really stands out to me from the NFC that I think, just like Jacksonville, is an underdog that not many people, you know, talking about, that could be a team that could make a run on the NFC side. So I get Jackson on the AFC. That could be, you know, a team that, you know, people are kind of, you know, counting out. I think Chicago, which I know they have to play Green Bay for now the third time this season, but I like Chicago. I like what they've done this year. Caleb Williams has been really good. He hasn't really been talked about as much, which I understand why, right? You got Stafford and May as, you know, as MVP front runners. And then you have some other guys that played very well this year, like Caleb Williams, like Trevor Lawrence, that aren't going to get, you know, the MVP looks, but have had very good seasons. Do you think that Chicago team can, you know, potentially make a run in the NFC? Which I know you said the Eagles are probably, you know, the best roster in the NFC, which they probably do have the best roster, but do you think that Chicago Bears team could make a run?
Yeah, to add on to what you said, like Caleb Williams, honestly, like he's having an all-star year himself. Like, what is this, his second year as well?
Yep, second year.
Like from last year on what he had to this year, it's like, again, huge improvements. Like I can say respectfully, like again, the Bears back then when we were growing up were a trash team. Nobody respected them. Like, oh my God, it's Jay Cutler this week. Got it. Smack. Now you're like, oh, Caleb Williams, like it's kind of scary. Like, was it last year or this year when he threw that touchdown at the end in that,
That was against the Commanders. Yeah, that was last year. Commanders threw it. It was Jaden Daniels that threw that, actually, though. It was on the other side.
okay.
Daniels had the
Oh.
big play, but he had a big pass this year though, Caleb, as well, in a couple late game scenarios, because they won six games in the last 2 minutes this year, or last 4 minutes. I saw a stat. They were trailing in six games this season in the last like 2 minutes, and they won like six of those games. So he had some big moments this year as well. But I know the play you're talking about, that was Jaden, and that's another guy, same draft class, right, as Drake May and Caleb. I mean, that's a very special class. You look at Bo Nix as well, who had a lot of success so far. There's a very talented group of guys there. But like you said with Caleb, he's scary to play against, right? The arm talent's great. He's starting to process, you know, the going through his progressions a little bit better. He's starting to understand not to take as many sacks, even though he's still taking, you know, a good amount. I think there's been progress there. He's obviously comfortable throwing into tight windows where not many quarterbacks would risk trying to throw an interception. He's not afraid of that. He's been very good this year, Caleb Williams. And I think I've seen a lot of shades of Aaron Rodgers in his game. I'm watching Rodgers play, you know, which we grew up watching Rodgers make big time throws every week. You're seeing that Caleb's game, right? Like he's made some tough throws this season, and you know, just a team that like Chicago, not many people are talking about. Like I said, like Jacksonville, and I understand why, because there are other teams that, you know, have probably had better years overall that, you know, kind of sprouted, like the Patriots. Not many people expect them to be as good this year. But I think Chicago, the team that, you know, gets a little overlooked. So, you know, we'll see what they do this year, but, you know, in the playoffs. But obviously making the playoffs is a success for them. You look at that draft class from last year, though, you got Williams, you got May, you got Daniels, you got Nix. Probably got to be, you know, at least in our last, you know, 5 years of, you know, watching the NFL, last 10 years, which I know we've watched the NFL our whole life, but the last 10 years when we've really started to understand the NFL draft and watching college football and, you know, knowing every player, this draft class got to be right up there with one of the best, right? That one I'm talking about from last year.
I definitely think like this last class has, I don't know. I did not see this last class producing QBs like that. Like, usually when a team drafts a QB from a school, they're just like, they're not high up, but they're like in a like general area where you're like, okay, I could trust this guy being my second string, or like I'll trust him playing a couple snaps if we're up by third. But yeah, it's like you said, like I remember Caleb at USC. He was all right. I remember that one game where he was upset. He lost, like, and everyone like came for him. They were like, oh my God, he's going to be a terrible quarterback in the NFL. Like, if he keeps crying like this or having this type of like attitude, it's not going to work well for him. Hey, flip the page. Look at him now. Like, yeah, the guy was just crying in his mom's lap just the other day because he lost a huge game, but now he's balling.
Yeah.
Like, all these players are hearing the criticism and they're like working on it in the summer. Like, Drake May, like, again, another, to bring him up again, like, he was definitely talked bad about. I was like, oh, he's not going to be the best. Like, he was coming underneath one of our vets at the time and was like, all right, is he really going to be our guy? Like, are we good to trust him? Should we trust a guy that's going to be in his second year to start a franchise team that has won 6 Super Bowls? Like, do we think he can lead us to the promised land? And surprisingly, right now, I think he can. 14-3, like, last night it was said that he has the highest completion percentage in, like, Patriots history. So, like, that's crazy to think about, especially with the Tom Brady that we had winning those 6 Super Bowls for us. You'd be like, oh, Tom Brady has the highest, like, completion percentage. But, like, a second-year guy coming from UNC, like, especially, no, like, no disrespect to UNC, but, like, knowing that UNC is more of a basketball school than a football school, like, this guy's just balling. Like, he's doing his job. He's coming to practice. He's coming to work every single day being like, hey, I'm trying to prove myself. I'm trying to show these people why I should be MVP. And, like, hey, I'll take it. Like, he has not given up.
Yeah, he's been awesome. I think you made a great point. He, you know, you can see that he's a leader as well. You said obviously he says the right things and, you know, has stepped up this year. And I think Tommy DeVito last week when I spoke with him here on the podcast, which, like I said, another Boston legend, Tommy DeVito, Cliff Gideon, two Boston legends. When I talked to him last week, Tommy mentioned the fact that Drake May always says the right things in these interviews, right? You can see he's a leader. You can see he's really mature as well, which he's a young guys, right? We're talking about Williams, May, Daniels, like, the keys to each of those franchises were handed to those guys, right? By year two, right? Year one, I guess, for Daniels, right? Because they went to the playoffs and made the NFC Championship. But the keys to the franchise were handed to all these guys at such a young age, and they've all really responded well to that. A guy like Caleb Williams that people are very critical of his character and saying he's not going to be ready for the NFL and he's pouting after losses and pouting after he turned the ball over. And you look at now when he's playing the NFL, he's really found a way to lock in, right? You win, lose, turn the ball over, throw 4 touchdowns, whatever it may be. He's keeping the right attitude. Same thing with Drake May. He's keeping his head up. And the Patriots, luckily for their sake, and the same thing with the Bears, they didn't have many bad games this year, right? So it wasn't like they had many opportunities to really have their head down. But even when they did, right, the Patriots lost 3 games. The Bears lost, I think it was, you know, 5 or 6 games. Those guys kept their heads up and kept playing and kept battling, which is very important, right? And I think you said attitude of players is very important too. People talked about Caleb's attitude and didn't think he was going to be successful in the league. but he completely, you know, like you said, grinded in the offseason, took those critics and basically turned them, you know, all into, you know, false, you know, narratives about him, right? Turned them all into false narratives, didn't really let any of those get to his head, and, you know, just played great ball. And I was critical of Caleb in college, not from, you know, the standpoint of him crying after the game. I didn't really think that was as big of a deal. But I also thought in the NFL, I thought he was a little bit overrated, which he was a great college player, but I thought he was getting a little bit overrated heading into the NFL. Then once he got to the league and everybody was going against him and, you know, talking bad about him, I was like, you know what? I'm rooting for this kid even more now. And I became such a fan of his game once he was drafted and once I started seeing a play. And it's tough for these guys, right? May and Daniels and same thing with Caleb Williams. They're young, right? They're going to have to make mistakes. You got to let these guys learn to make mistakes. And also, they weren't always surrounded with the best of talent, right? Like, Drake May last year did not really have any receivers to throw to besides, you know, Pop Douglas. This year, they add Diggs, right? And you add Henderson to help the run game. You add Will Campbell in the draft to help him on the offensive line, which Campbell's going to get better and better over time, hopefully, right? And he'll keep improving. And I know he's been battling injuries, but at some point, you know, he's going to lock in and be a franchise left tackle, right? So it's important to surround these guys with the right support staff so, you know, they're in a position to succeed. Williams, May, this year, they were obviously helped out by better coaching, right? Ben Johnson's been awesome. Vrabel's been awesome. But you got to give him credit as well. Like you said, like, they took all that, you know, negative criticism about them and turned them all into, you know, lessons for themselves. They took all of that noise and just locked in, you know, in the offseason. So I give both of those guys credit, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that, you know, NFL playoff, you know, picture shakes out over the next couple weeks. It's going to be crazy, I'm sure. I'd imagine you got the Patriots coming out of the AFC.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope we just defeat the Bills, bro. Like, I hate seeing the Bills be there every year since Tom Brady honestly left. I think it's been between the Bills and like the Chiefs that have been taking over the AFC. And like this year, I'm like, again, sorry, Patrick Mahomes, but I'm glad that your Chiefs did not make it that far and you guys got eliminated early, because they would have been my team to be like, all right, I'm scared to play them in the AFC because they're turning into a dynasty. Like, who would have thought? Like, they're also a team back then were saying, okay, Alex Smith and Kareem Hunt are
Dwayne Bowe back in the day, like you're talking like 10 years ago. Yeah.
We're talking like these guys, again, they were a good team back then, but like they weren't winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, you're right.
They get Travis Kelce, freaking Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, their team's like beautiful. It's like, and now you're just like, dang, they dealt with injuries like us, like everyone else in the league. And now they're going to feel like everyone else has, like, granted, everyone else was hating on the Patriots when they were on their dynasty run. But like, once the Chiefs became that team, the hate went straight to the Chiefs. And it's like, damn, bro, I do not want to see them win another Super Bowl. I do not want to see them even in the Super Bowl. Like, everyone was wondering, when is it going to be their time to like sit back? Like, who are they going to let take the driver's seat now from the AFC and be like, all right, I'm going to hand this off to you. I want to see how you do. And unfortunately, the Chiefs had to deal with injuries this year and like just games that weren't going their way that made this not their year to make it back.
Yeah, you said it best, right? Injuries were unfortunate for them this year. And early on in the season, you said it best there as well. Like, just games just did not go their way. They start out the season, if I remember right, 0-2 or 0-3. They got back to 500 and then just could never really build, you know, a winning streak. They just kept losing games. They usually would win a lot of one-score games that they won last year. I think they were like, at one point, you know, last year, they were like 10-0 or 11-0 on one-score games. It might have been even 13-0, honestly. They were crazy in one-score games. The last, like, in 2023 and 2024, they were great in one-score games. And this year, in 2025, they didn't really have that same success that they had, you know, in the past 15 one-score games. This year, they didn't have that. They lost a lot of those games that they usually would win. And I know a lot of Patriots fans are happy to see them out of the playoffs, because just like Tommy DeVito said last week, when Mahomes is in the playoffs, everyone just expects him to win because he has that experience. Obviously, a great coach in Andy Reid, a very talented roster. Like, that team, it makes sense why Patriots fans wouldn't want to see them in the playoffs, because they've been there and they've done it, right? Like, experience is very important once you get to, you know, the big dance when it's all, you know, sudden death, you know, win or lose, you know, win or go home. So, it was unfortunate for Mahomes. I think when you look at this Chiefs team, I think a lot of people are overlooking their team for next year, right? I know this year's over with. And I think Mahomes, if he does bounce back from his injury, which I think he's gonna, I think Patrick Mahomes will come back. I don't think the Chiefs dynasty is necessarily over with. It might just be, I guess, a gap year, right? Like the Patriots, not the Patriots, like the Celtics this year, right? People expected with Tatum being out, it would be a gap year, right? The Chiefs now having Mahomes out for, you know, the last, whatever it was, six or so games, they kind of, you know, ended the season on a bad note. People expect them to have a gap year, you know, this year, and then maybe even struggle next year if Mahomes misses the first few games. I think they're still going to be a good team. I do. I'm not really giving up on the dynasty being over with. But, you know, with that being said, I think when there is a dynasty, which I know as a Patriots fan, right, you wouldn't want to see them in the playoffs right now. But from, let's say, a general fan's perspective, it's good for the teams like the Dodgers, right, in baseball, the Chiefs in the NFL. Like, you don't want to see those teams in the playoffs, and a lot of people are rooting against them, but it kind of makes the playoffs more interesting, right? When those teams are, you know, out of it, let's say, look at this year with the Chiefs being out of it, it's now wide open, the AFC, right? Like, anybody could win, and makes things more interesting. But like you said, having a common enemy between the whole NFL, that's kind of what makes the game somewhat interesting too, right? Everybody was rooting against the Chiefs the last few years. And, you know, obviously this year was unfortunate with the way things ended for them. But I think you make a good point, though, that a lot of people root against, you know, those teams that have won for years, right? Like the Patriots, that was everybody's biggest enemy, right? No one ever wanted to see them win. And now you blink and that the rebuild is over with and they're back, right? So it's crazy when you think about it that way. But anything else you want to add about the NFL before we dive over to talking some hoops?
Do we think our boy Travis Kelce is going to retire after this year?
It's a good question. I would say no. And I think because it was a bad note, like I thought last year, you know, obviously last year was a better year for the Chiefs, making it to the Super Bowl. I thought that was going to be the end for him. Coming back this year and just having an even worse end to the season, right? If you make the Super Bowl and you lose, it's tough, but not making the playoffs, it's a tough way for him to walk out. I think Kelce will be back one more year with Patrick Mahomes. What do you think, though? What's your prediction?
I don't know. I want to say the same thing, honestly. Like, it's not good to walk out, like, not close to your target goal, because it's like, what did I just work all hard this season for? Like, yeah, I got eliminated out of playoffs, but like, I want to at least retire semi-champion or like a full champion at that point. Like, it sucks that some athletes go out without no ring. Like, I hate that for them. Like, it's not even on them either, though. It's not on the team, but it's like, as a whole, like, just things could have changed for both sides, the player and the team, that could have helped or hurt them when the big prize at the end. Mm-hmm. But I hope to see him back next season. Ever since Gronk's now officially retired, but Gronk, like, left the Patriots. I didn't really have a favorite tight end on the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I was like, Travis Kelce, he also wears 87 like Gronk. He's mm-hmm. kind of playing like Gronk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I started liking him. I was like, I'm going to hate the Chiefs, but Travis Kelce, like, you kind of reminded me of Gronk, and I wish he came to the Pats at one point, but we weren't going to get him. So it's like, I'll root for him from afar, but mm-hmm. hey, I'd love to see him back for another couple of seasons if he can. And if not, if this was his last season, I'm glad I got to watch it and see, like, his whole career, where he started from to where he is now. Like, who would have thought he would have got three championships?
Yeah. And he's an all-time great, right? Not even just at the tight end position, right? He's an all-time, you know, NFL great overall. And I think you make a really good point, right, too. You look at Gronk and the success he had. Kelce kind of just took over right after Gronk was done, right, as being that, you know, best tight end in the NFL, very good playmaker, kind of that same guy that, you know, Brady had with Gronkowski. Kelce was that for Patrick Mahomes, right? A guy that always gets open, makes a big catch in big moments, big target, a guy with a big personality too, right? Gronk had a big personality. Travis Kelce is a big personality, right? Like, those are, you know, leaders in your locker room, guys that, you know, players enjoy playing with, guys that can lighten the mood when, you know, times are tough, which the Patriots and the Chiefs, you know, in their dynasties, they never really had that many tough moments, right? They always were consistently good and, you know, making the playoffs. But, you know, in some tougher times, those guys, I'm sure, lightened the room, and players, you know, want to be around those guys, you know, and be with them, you know, in the same locker room, right? And, you know, share the same field with them. So, you make a great point. He was a great player. If this is the end for Travis Kelce, I do expect him to play one more year, but in the event that's it, he retires, and, you know, I know Taylor Swift and him have their wedding coming up, you know, in the next year or whatever. I guess, you know, he's got obviously that, you know, going for him as well. He's got, you know, a family now, you know, to build and stuff. So, in the event football's over with, had a great career, and I'm sure he'll be in broadcasting. If this is it, you'd expect him to be probably on TV right next year next to his brother Jason.
Yep, I would hope so. You know, their podcast is already great. So if they want to take their talents to now commentating, I wouldn't hate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think it could be something like you see with Eli and Peyton. Maybe they could have their own show. Maybe all four of them together, you know, would have a show on Monday Night Football, you know, some weeks. I think that could be cool, but we'll see. I think he plays one more year. I honestly hope he plays one more year because, like you said, you want to see players at all-time greats go out with at least a chance to win. And like you said, just things didn't go well for the Chiefs this year. Kelce didn't have the same production he's had in the past, and Mahomes being out obviously hurt that. Just things didn't go well. That's why I think he probably, you know, takes one more run at it. One more guy I want to ask you about before we switch over talking hoops is Aaron Rodgers. This could be it for him. Maybe one last potential playoff run for him. Do you think Aaron Rodgers retires at the end of the season?
You know, I don't know what he has left to prove. Like, he's won a Super Bowl. We've seen everything he's capable of. Like, I don't think, like, yes, we all fail at something, but like, hey, this guy really has not done anything like wrong. Like, he's been placed in tough predicaments where he can't change the like likeliness of something happening. Like, but this year being on the Steelers, he's definitely proved like, hey, I still am that guy from when I was on the Packers. Like, I still ball out. I just need what I need in order to be successful. Like,
yeah. But I would agree. I think you saw that last year, right? He was even successful in the Jets, which they didn't have a good record necessarily, but he showed he could still play. And then he goes to a better team with the Steelers, better coaching with Mike Tomlin, some good weapons as well around him like DK Metcalf. And you see, obviously, he has success and shows he can still play. And it's a guy that a lot of people have been critical of, but like you noted, like he doesn't really have that much to prove. He's an all-time NFL great, one of the best talents ever to play the game of football. I think when you look at talent, like, I don't know if anybody's more precise throwing the deep ball than Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, he's a fun quarterback to watch. I think one of the most talented players to ever play the game. I would probably say even the most talented quarterback, potentially, which I know Brady has success. I know that'd be probably a big debate, but Brady obviously has the success and has the ring. So when you look at greatest versus most talented, I think they're two different things. I think Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback to ever play the game with his talent, but obviously Brady had the success and, you know, he's the GOAT for that reason. But I think when you look at Rodgers' play, though, he's fun to watch. And even last night, you saw some big-time throws last night from him where he was stepping up in big moments. I know the touchdown to end the game to get the win wasn't necessarily, like, you know, a tough throw because, you know, it was blown coverage where, you know, it was a great route by the receiver. But you look at that team and what he's been able to do with them this year, especially last night, when they go home, he stepped up, had a big game. Like, you root for those all-time greats. I do think this is the end for Rodgers. I don't know why. Last year, I thought he'd play one more year, and he did. For some reason, I think this is his last run. I think this will be it. I do think he retires. What do you think, though? You think this is his last run?
Yeah. I think he's about ready to hang it up. He'll hand it down, and hopefully the Steelers will be in good hands next year. If they want, they can draft a QB this year in the draft, but other than that, I think they're in good hands. They've had great quarterbacks before. Aaron Rodgers, Big Ben. He was great.
Yeah.
You didn't even hate. Man was a stud as well. Like,
yeah. They've had talent. They've had talent for sure. So and they've had a great coach in Tomlin, right? He's always been a guy that's been competitive. So that's important. But I think if Rodgers does retire, just like Travis Kelce, you're losing two legends, right? Two of the best to ever play the game. And like I said about Rodgers, I think he's the most talented quarterback to ever play the game, right? So you're losing a top talent, a guy that's always fun to watch. And if you look at the last 5 years, think about the amount of great players that have retired, right? You look at Tom Brady, right? Your GOAT, right? Retires, right? He's gone. And then you look at Rodgers could potentially be gone this year. And you're looking at Philip Rivers. I know he came back, but you know, that will be the end for him now too, right? Like a lot of all-time greats. He just retired again. Exactly. Right. Like he's another guy that's an all-time great. Drew Brees, for example, the last 5 years, he's retired. Like a lot of all-time greats are leaving our game. That's our childhood, right? A lot of these greats are now leaving and it's sad, right? Even if people don't love Aaron Rodgers. I know he's kind of a player that, you know, not everyone was always a fan of. It's sad to see those guys go out because we just grew up watching them on TV, just like LeBron James, just like Kevin Durant, just like Steph Curry. Like, we grew up watching these guys every single night. You know, anytime there's a game on TV, primetime, It's those guys. People want to see those guys play, right? Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, like people want to see those guys play. So it's sad, you know, knowing it's a different era and, you know, things are going to change and, you know, the NFL won't be the same. But, I just have a gut feeling though. I think this will be it for Rodgers. I do. And we'll see what they do. I think they don't get the easiest matchup going against that Texans defense. I think they can surprise the Texans next week, but, I do think it'll be a tough test. I like Rodgers and I think the Steelers end up winning that one, but I don't think it'll be easy.
It definitely won't be easy against Will Anderson because that guy is definitely scary on defense.
Yeah, he's a stud, and they're clicking at the right time, right? Talking about Jacksonville clicking at the right time. Houston's really clicked, you know, over the last 8 games. They started out the year, I think it was 0-3, and they found a way to really figure things out and, you know, get back on track. So they're looking good. Want to dive over and talk about the Celtics now?
Do it.
All right, let's jump over to talking some basketball. Looking at the Celtics this year, another team that really outperformed expectations, right? The Patriots did. The Celtics have this season. They currently are at 22-12. They are playing tonight as well. So, you know, that record will change tonight. Are you surprised by the Celtics' success this season?
Yes and no. I'll say yes because obviously my guy JT, like with him being out since that next series last year, I was like, we might. I thought this year was going to be a tanking year. Not like intentionally, but like, I thought teams were going to look at us like we just won the chip again and they just want to bite at us. Mm-hmm. So they're like, they have no Tatum. We can take we can all take bites of this team right now. Like mm-hmm. we can make them the worst team that they've ever been. Like, but at the same time, we still have our leader, JB. Like, man, that, like, I forget, 3 maybe so some years ago, he said the energy shifts. Like, mm-hmm. ever since that tweet came out, the energy has shifted on this team. Mm-hmm. No matter if we have a new player, old player, returner, like, we can send a guy to a new team and take him back. And, like, it's like they never left.
Yeah, he's a culture builder. He is, Jalen. And you make a good example, a guy that's left and come back. Al Horford, right, which I know he's gone now, but, you know, he left, obviously left the Celtics, went to the Sixers, finds his way back to the Celtics years later, and, you know, he's part of that process of things changing, right? Jaylen Brown was a big reason for that, and he's a big reason they've had success this season, right? Without Tatum, I think people expected them to be bad, and they, like you said, they smelled blood, right? They knew the Celtics were going to be struggling without Tatum. People thought this would be a gap year. I thought it would be not necessarily a gap year, but that'd be like a 500 season, which would be good when you don't have Jason Tatum playing. And they're much better than that. They're 22-12. What do you think about Tatum though? Do you think he's going to find his way back to the lineup by April, or do you think they don't risk it and they just let him rest for the full season?
I think they should just let him rest. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's like we're saying right now, like Jaylen Brown has changed the culture so much. Like, the other night, I'm sorry, but he had 50 against your Clippers.
He did. Yep.
Crazy game. Like, yep. Kawhi just had 55 like days before that, and now JB comes into town and he's scoring 50. But JB's just, it's like I said about Diggs earlier. Like, JB's that captain without being the captain. Like, years ago when we were making the finals run, I'm one of those people that was like, okay, JT should have won the finals MVP. JT should have won MVP. But it's not just JT. They're a duo, JT, JB. Like, they're not going to split them. One may not be playing hot, but the other one's going to feed off of it and be like, hey, chin up, buddy. Like, let's go. Like, I'm not going to let you fall back. And that's basically what, like, JB is saying to JT. Like, hey, I know you're out. You're dealing with your recovery right now, but hey, I got this team. Like, don't worry about us. Take your time to recoup. Like, I got us. Don't worry. Like, me and Derek, me, Pritch, like, we got these new guys. We will whip them into shape. You just take your time healing. And when you come back, we'll obviously we're going to welcome you back with open arms. Like, but if he does come back, I would like to have him on a minute restriction. Just because it's like, we've seen these injuries in the NBA. You get hurt. Like, if you rush it too fast and you decide you want to come back, next game you're injured again. Like, and what's that? Another 2 years of you not playing and then you're just like, bro, like,
Yeah.
I wish I was out there with my team. But since I rushed my recovery process, I can't come out and do what I'm able to do.
You're right. That's a great point. I think you're right. I think if the timing's right and he's ready to play, right? Let's say with 10 games to go in the regular season, timing's right, put him on a minutes restriction if he wants to play and he thinks he's ready. If the Celtics are in the position to potentially contend though, that's what it comes down to. They're 22 and 12 right now, so they're in a very good, you know, potential, you know, seeding. Let's say they could be like a 3 or 4 seed in the East. Could maybe even be the 2, right, or the 1. You never know. Probably too far back to be the 1. And not too far. They're only like 3 or 4 games probably behind Detroit. But let's say they're the 3 or 4 seed, right? If they're in that position still, and Tatum's potentially going to come back in April, and he might be ready to play, you have a really good chance to win the East, right? So, like, I think it's tempting. But if he's not 100% and the team's not in a position to potentially contend, I think it makes the most sense just to sit him and relax him and get ready for next year so he doesn't miss 2 seasons, like you said. You don't really want that. But Jason Tatum, obviously, Jaylen Brown, like, those are 2 guys that have really uplifted this Celtics team from a tougher time, which I think it was honestly more Isaiah Thomas that uplifted a team that was rebuilding into being a contender. And then Tatum and Brown kind of learned from Isaiah. And then, you know, things kind of kept going from there. But I think this Celtics team right now, people overlook them because of that Tatum injury. And it makes sense why, right? You lose your number one guy. Most people expect them to struggle like Indiana did this year without Tyrese Halliburton, right? They're probably the worst record in the NBA. But that wasn't the case of the Celtics team. And it's because of Jaylen Brown uplifting the guys around him, taking more shots in big moments, which he's been awesome this season. He put up, you know, 50 against my Clippers, which was tough. But you also look at it from the perspective of, I love the game of basketball, right? Like, just like you, we love the game. I want the Clippers to win that game, but, you know, things didn't go their way. But I also respect greatness, right? Like, I enjoy watching guys that can go out, you know, get 40 points, you know, get a bucket at any given moment. Like Tyrese Maxey, a guy in Philly that I'm a huge fan of. Tyrese Maxey, I love watching because he can get a bucket at any given moment. That's what you saw the other night with Jaylen Brown. Got some big-time buckets there for the Celtics in that game against L.A. Ended up, you know, being a loss for the Clippers and a win for the Celtics. And, you know, Brown is a big reason for that. But the Jay Bros, I call them, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, those 2 guys, you know, are fun to watch. They are. And that's the reason that, you know, Celtics are in a position to succeed to not just this year if Tatum comes back, but for years to come as well. Do you think if the Celtics do come back, right, which – I say the Celtics. Let's say the Jason Tatum comes back is what I meant. If Tatum comes back in April, do you think the Celtics team is that number one team in the East potentially? If they're playing the way they are right now and you add in Jason Tatum, do you think they are the team to beat in the East? Or is it still Detroit? Because Detroit's still playing good ball. They look good this year.
Detroit's playing good ball. I can't hate on them. I don't know. It's a toss-up. Like, I don't know what Jason Tatum's going to give me if he comes back. Like, I don't, again, he's been working his behind off behind the doors while he's been trying to recover. So I would assume like he's probably close to being the old Jason Tatum of like jumping, dunking, doing all that. I wouldn't want to like have that like issue of, hey, we put him back in. Another injury, like this time it's on his left knee or his wherever he injured the first time, it could change to the other one or he could injure the same one. And it's just like, yeah, no, but if he does come back healthy, regardless if we play him or not and we become the number one team. Yeah. Like it's like what I said about the Patriots earlier. Like we were a dynasty at one point. Everyone wanted to kill us. Like, if we become that team now without our star player, like, yeah, obviously everyone's going to be like, all right, body. Now they're going to say, now we're coming for Jaylen Brown because Jaylen Brown's now turning into that guy that we didn't think was going to be the freak monster. Like, nobody,
big time.
Like, in my opinion, I didn't think he was going to go out and draw 50 the other day. I didn't even know if he had a 50 in his bag.
Yeah, he tied a career high. He did it. Yeah. He went off. He did. That was a big moment for him. And I think you said it best about Tatum, right? You don't know if he'll be back and he'll be healthy, right? Like, even if he gets back, it might not be the Jason Tatum that's, you know, an all NBA Jason Tatum giving you 30 and 10 any given night, right? Like, it's going to be tough, right? He's not going to be the same exact speed, not going to be able to jump as much, not going to be able to play as much defense, not going to have as long of, you know, stretchers on the court. And he's coming back from, you know, Kyrie tore his ACL. He was the torn Achilles, which is even tougher to come back from Tatum, right? Like, torn Achilles is tough. And I think, like you said, like, this is a guy that, You don't want to rush back because you don't want him to miss two seasons. Like, let's say he comes back and he rushes it and he gets hurt again. Now he's out all of next year. So he missed most of this year and he'd be out all of next season as well. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily worth the gamble, but in the event he does come back and he's the Jason Tatum of old, you know, before the injury, which he can get back there, right? You know, with the full recovery. But I think if he's coming back in April, I don't know if he'll be fully recovered by then. And that's why it's a worry to me. But I think the Celtics, if they do get him back, he's the best acquisition any team will have midseason. But there are some guys that are on the trade market right now. And a guy I want to get your opinion on, Trae Young. He could be potentially traded. I was reading today that the Hawks and him are working with his agents on potentially finding a destination for him. So he could get moved. Another guy is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis might get traded, which it seems like Trae Young is a given he's going to be traded. Do you think Giannis gets traded by the Bucks? Do you think the Bucks will move on from him at some point?
I don't know. Like, again, that conversation was, what, early this season when they were, like, kind of sloppy-woppy, but, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like when the conversation dies of a player being traded, like, at that point, it's like, hey, we're keeping him. Like, I don't think we're going to get rid of him. Like, I think, honestly, the Bucks might just put a franchise tag on him.
Just say staying there forever, yeah. So they're not going to give him, not going to even shop him by any means. I know what you mean. Like, they wouldn't want to ever move on, which I get it. I mean, he's a superstar. Why would you want to move on from him? And I know he's getting up there in age. He's past 30 now, but he's still a great player. Like, you don't want to move on from a guy that, especially in a small market, like, it's not going to be easy to get back another Giannis. And you made a good point. Once players are in trade talks and they kind of request a trade behind the scenes and then things kind of just simmer down and no one hears about it, then that team's probably like, hey, we're keeping you, just like Brooklyn did with KD. KD requested a trade multiple times, and the second or third time he did, they ended up moving on from him. But the first time, they looked around, didn't look into the office, and they said, hey, you're staying. And they said, you know, you're our guy. You're our biggest piece of our franchise, just like the Bucks, which the Bucks got a championship with Giannis. Like, it's tough to move on from a guy that gave you a ring and still gives you the opportunity. If the team is right around him, he still gives you the opportunity to still win a ring. So I don't think they'll want to move on from him. I think they're going to want to hold him, especially when he's under contract, I think another two seasons after this. Like, you don't want to move on from a guy like that. So you would expect them to keep him, correct?
Yeah, unless, you know, I don't know how they're going to get a Wemby, like, if they were to get Wemby, but I doubt that's going to happen. Like,
yeah, I would agree. I think they're going to keep him. I don't know if any team would give up, which it's going to be a big price tag, right? A young player, some expiring contracts, a lot of picks. Like, I don't know how many teams will be able to, you know, put up a package together for Giannis. But Trae Young, he could potentially get moved. Are there any teams that you think could be a good landing spot for Trae Young? I think Houston, which I know they had Fred VanVleet at one point, and he was, you know, out before the beginning of the season. He had an injury, and, you know, he hasn't played at all this season, if I remember right. He could be a potential landing spot, right? Is Houston potentially for Trae Young? Are there any teams that stand out to you that could be a place that Trae Young goes?
I feel like a team that probably would need him a lot, and just unfortunately, it's just one of the bad teams as well. But like, the Hornets could use him, honestly.
Like, yeah, if they move on from LaMelo, which they could at some point. Though.
In my opinion, I don't think they need to move away from LaMelo.
You like LaMelo, right?
I do like LaMelo. Make LaMelo the two, make Trey the one, move down from there. Like, LaMelo can still produce. I think he just needs other weapons around him, and that's probably why Trey is looking to move, because he's like, bro, I've played with so many different people on this Hawks team. I've played with Clint Capella probably a great amount of times. Like,
yeah,
and I'm just not getting what I want. Like, He's just at this point, he's like, hey, I need either a big or I need like a guy that can shoot. Mm-hmm. Like, but if I'm still here with the Hawks, I'm not going to do that, because it seems like every time we make it to the playoffs or even close to the playoffs, it's because of me and I'm putting the team on my back.
Like, yeah, he has a lot of responsibilities. He does.
Like, it really stinks. Like, when he played against New York, like, I thought they could have beat New York. Like, I really thought the Hawks would have beat New York in the series, because it's just New York has so much hate for him. And when he goes to that arena, it's like he knows what he's getting from the fans there. Mm-hmm. And that's when he, like, balls out the most. Like, You give that a player, like, all the negative energy in the world, like, tell him, yo, F you, like, we hate you, like, you start throwing things at them, They use that as fuel. They're like, oh, you hate me? I'll make you hate me more. Like, I'll give you a bigger reason to hate me. You're just hating me because I'm destroying your team? Okay, I'll give your team 60 tonight. Or I'll give your team a nice, like, triple-double. And you're just going to hate me more because I just made your team look silly.
You're right. He used it as fuel. He did. And he's had some good moments, right? They never necessarily, you know, they never got the ring that they wanted and never really got to even the conference finals, I don't think. But he's a good player. I know people talk about his defenses as an issue, but if you're looking for a guy that can give you, you know, 25 any given night, also with 10 assists, he's a great guy for that. I think he's third in NBA, like all time in assists per game is what I read today. So he's had a great success in his career. I think averaging like 9.8 assists per game. Very good scorer as well. I think you made an interesting point. I think there could be a team like the Hornets, another team that, you know, like the Utah Jazz, something like that, where they're out of the playoff picture right now. They're not going to probably make a run this year, which Trae Young has one more year left on his deal after this year is over with, and it's a player option. So he could be a free agent. And obviously with him wanting to be traded and the Hawks working on a trade with him, his trade value isn't that high, right? It's not going to, you know, net an unreal return like it would have probably a year or two ago with more years on his contract and, you know, being fully healthy. He's battled some injuries this year. Teams could buy low on him and say, you know what? He's a player option for this year. We'll see how this year goes. Let's trade for him, throw him in our lineup, not have to give up as much as we would have a couple years ago. See what he looks like next to our guys. And if it all works out, he picks up his player option. If not, and he doesn't pick up the player option, we could, you know, re-sign him in free agency. I think that's a good point. People wouldn't think of that, Cliff. That's a great idea by you. You're right. I don't know if it'd be Hornets. I don't know if it'd be a team like the Bulls. It could be any of those teams, right? Like a team that is a little bit out of the playoff picture of being a contender right now that people aren't talking about. Let's say even like the LA Clippers, if they wanted to blow things up and get rid of Harden and get rid of Kawhi, maybe they could go get Trae Young and say, you know what, we could give him, you know, a max contract or whatever this summer if he wanted and he opted out, right? Like, I think you make a good point there. No one would think of that. I agree with you. People would think like, oh, like I thought, throw him on a team that's contending, like Houston, right? That needs a point guard because, you know, Fred VanVleet's out for the year. But you make a good point. It could be a team that says, you know what, let's just throw him in the lineup and see what it looks like. That's a good one by you. I want to ask you one more question about the NBA. In the event that Anthony Davis is traded, where do you think could be a good landing spot for him? I was going to say the Hawks, and now if they're trading Trae Young, I don't know if that really makes the most sense because if they trade Trae Young, you know, they're going to shake up their roster a little bit, and they do have a good core. Like, I like that Hawks team heading into the year, but if you trade Trae Young, I'm not sure exactly, you know, what they're hoping to do. They've played better without Trae this year, so maybe if they get Anthony Davis in a deal for Trae Young, maybe they could be a better team. Who knows? But where do you think is a good landing spot for Anthony Davis? I thought the Hawks because, you know, Porzingis has missed games this year, you know, with that illness again. So I thought maybe he could be, you know, a guy that could be there and hopefully be the anchor for them in the paint. But are there any teams on your mind that could be a good landing spot for AD?
Honestly, I don't know. But it's like I said again, it's like another team that needs him. Like a team that's slacking with the boards, a team that's slacking with a big man being present, or even a vet. Like, yeah. They're missing a vet center. Like, some teams I know, like, just have a rookie, like, center or a guy that's been dealing with injuries for a while so that they're not able to play with him enough. So, I'm going to say that probably, like, the Pelicans, for example. Like, Zion's getting better. I won't lie. Zion's definitely getting better. But, like, when Zion was missing, when Zion is missing because Zion's still trying to get healthy and do better for himself. Like, I guess AD would be a good fit there because it's like, he's a vet. That team's like kind of on the, not the shorter end, but like they're at the point where they could use AD as like, hey, you're a vet. You've been to the championship before. Like you have a ring.
Yeah. He's been to the Pelicans too, right? He's already been there, right? So he already knows the city and. And it was the franchise, like, that's a good point. You're right. I think you said it best too. A team that could use him defensively and maybe rebounding wise. Detroit, which I don't know what their stats are rebounding wise, but you look at that lineup, you got Tobias Harris at the four. You add Anthony Davis to that lineup, it's a big time upgrade, right? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. So what team can he elevate the most that could potentially win it this year? Which it could go to a rebuilding team still, like you said, like we said about Trae Young. Like, people don't really think that a lot of time when these guys get traded because, you know, a lot of the time it's the big teams trading for, you know, the big contracts and stuff like that because they want to win right now. So, you know, they're willing to give up whatever it is in draft picks and players to go get them to win right now. But I think the Pistons, if we're looking at a team that could contend right now with Anthony Davis, I think that's a team I just thought of now. And I'm like, you know what? That could be a good landing spot. And if not, it could be another team that's young, like you said, maybe like out of the Portland Trailblazers, like they're not going to win right now, but you know, maybe he could be a veteran in that locker room and be, you know, a guy in that lineup that maybe in a year from now, they could be in a better spot, you know, with him, you know, in that lineup. Cause I think he has two more full seasons on his contract. So, you know, that could be, you know, something that the team's trading for him knowing, okay, we have two more years of AD. And if he's healthy, he could be that difference maker for us. So, you know, we'll see. But let's dive over to talk some Canes baseball. We'll relive our go-to days, which I got. Oh, but you got it on too. Look at that. We're both repping. Look at that.
How to bring it back.
Come on now. Both repping our Canes baseball. This is big time here. This is big time.
That too.
Here we go. Look at that.
Closet, bro.
There we go. Look at that. We wish we had our jerseys, but you know, we got this. Oh. I got to show for it.
Give me my jersey back. That's all I got to say.
We got this. This is something, but you know, part of our championship run was, you know, getting these sweatshirts. We got it. I think it was before that junior year or sophomore year season before we won, we had these. So, wish we had, you know, our jerseys to show for it, but at least we got this. This is nice. We'll take it. So to relive our go-to days, I'll let you go. What were you going to say? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm saying like, I've kept it since we've got this. Like we've had other nice things, but you know, this is definitely like, this was definitely our freshman year.
Was it freshman year? Yeah, I was trying to remember. It was freshman or sophomore year, but it was before we won, definitely.
Yeah.
It was before we won, which we won sophomore year, won the 2017 MCSAO championship, which was great. Made it back to the finals in 2018, and then 2019 we lost in the semis. But, you know, we had a lot of great runs in high school, and I'm looking back at a lot of our big moments, right? We won a championship, right? A state championship together. You look back at some other runs that didn't go our way necessarily, but they were fun journeys along the way. You were a big part of our energy. And the reason why I said you were my teammate, because you were on that team with us, Cliff. You were, right? No matter what anyone says, right? You were on that team with us. You were just as much as anybody else. You were just as much a part of the winning as any other player on that team or anyone else around the team, you know? So you were a big part of us and our success, a big guy that, you know, brought the energy, right? Which we needed the energy. You were the big energy guy on the team. We needed that, a guy that kept the, you know, the energy up, kept their morale up when times are tough, which we didn't have many losing streaks, but when we did have a tough two or three games in a row, like you kept everybody, you know, positive and kept everybody locked in. I want to ask you one thing, which after all of our wins, you'd run the bases always and slide into home plate. What was the motivation? Like, what was your thought process behind the first time you did that? What made you think today I want to run the bases and, you know, slide into home plate after we win?
All right. It goes back to, it's going to come in. It ties to one of our questions later. But it definitely had to deal with your game winning catch against Salem when you leaned over the bench on like third baseline. We're up 5-4, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it was close game.
Bottom nine, two outs. Again, I don't know how you did it, but you just like, leaned over glove and just like, I don't know. There was a prayer there and the ball just like fell in your hand, game over. I was like, oh my God. Like, in my opinion, like I haven't played baseball in so long and I was a catcher. So like, I never had to have that like game winning play unless I was tagging someone out at home or like shooting them out at one position. Yeah. But like, hey, you leaned over. We had that catch. It was like, what, our first game of the season?
Yeah, it was early. It was early on. I was playing third base, a position I don't typically play, and it was a ball behind my head, and I remember I turned, and I'm running, looking over my shoulder, and whoever's playing left field, I think it was like Kevin Mannion was coming in, you know, in left field, and I was at third, and we were both trying to communicate, seeing who's going to make the play along, you know, the foul line, and you had the fence there, and the bench was to the a little bit behind me, the foul line, and you had, you know, the stands and stuff. It was a tough play. I thought, and I honestly, I look back at it, I think if I turned kind of the other way and kind of backpedaled, it would have been an easier catch. I made it a little bit more difficult. You know, once you turn the wrong way, you don't really have time to adjust. You just got to stick to that side and, you know, hope you found it. And I did, obviously I made the play and I was very grateful, cause that was a big win, right? Winning in Salem was never easy. You know, that was, sophomore year, the year we ended up winning. So that was a great game. It was a fun one, a close game, which Quinn McCarthy pitched a gem in that one. I remember, you know, gave us everything he had on the mound that one. And you ran the bases. Was that the first time you ran the bases? Was that one?
Yeah, I definitely think that was the first time I ever ran the bases for us. But like I said, like that catch, first game of the season, I was like, I got to do something for these guys, bro. Like they just were out there playing. I'm just out here doing the book. Like I got to do something, like get the team morale hype. Like mind you, coach is speaking while I'm running bases and you guys are like, what is he doing? And I'm just like, all right, keep going, keep going, keep going.
Like, locked in though. You were like, locked in. You did it every game. Every win after that, you did that, which my mom, you know, she took pictures at every game, right? Of us, you know, running, us playing, team pictures, all that. And she got a lot of pictures of me and you celebrating. I was always waiting for you at home plate, right? Telling you to get down, slide, and get out and yelling. Like that was always a fun memory. I'm happy, you know, that you started that tradition. Cause if you didn't, who knows what we would have, you know, been, right? I think that brought a lot of juice to our lineup and, you know, kept everybody locked in. We always look forward to, you know, you getting everybody going before every game and then obviously after every game as well once we got the win. And that's why I said, no matter what anyone says, you were on that team more than anybody. You were a teammate of ours and you were on that roster, you know, playing an integral role in our championship run. So that would be one of my top moments, which I wanted to ask you, your top three moments as, you know, part of – I would say the championship run, being part of that championship run is my number one. So besides that, your other two top moments during Canes baseball, which I can try to think of mine if you want to take a second. Unless you've got yours, I'll let you go first.
All right. Let me think. You can go ahead.
All right. I'll say the championship run, winning that was awesome. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because, you know, we look back at, you know, those moments, right? And that was kind of me and you, which we were always friends. We've been friends now for over a decade, but those moments on the baseball field is where we got even closer, right? That's why I want to talk about our time during high school baseball, because that's where we really grew as a friendship, as a brotherhood, right? And we got even closer. So winning a championship was a bond that you can never break, right? Once a champion, always a champion. So that would be my number one. I'd say that game at Salem would be number two, because that's kind of where I cemented myself as being like somewhat of an everyday player, right? I started playing, you know, most games after that. And that was a tough place to play, right? They beat us a lot and they were a very good team. So beating them was nice, beating them at Salem. Very good program, very well respected. Like they've always been, you know, a top team and the team to beat, you know, alongside us. You know, those were always the top two teams in our conference. That win at Salem. And then I would say senior day. I'm going to go senior day because I look back and we had a lot of people there supporting us, right? A lot of people in our class, you know, were there that day at Moakley. It was a doubleheader. We tried to get everybody in the lineup that we could. I still wish we got you in at bat. It is what it is, I guess. But I wish we got you in that lineup that day. But I look back, senior day was nice because that was one more run where everybody got to play. You know, everybody got out there. And it was two more wins we had right before the playoffs. So I'd say that was one of my moments. I would say one of the top three moments. Also playing in East Boston, which we did that. Our senior year, we played in East Boston against Excel Academy by the airport, that field I always drove by growing up. And that was a place I always wanted to play, and we got to play there. So I guess I'm changing the senior day. That's going to fall out of the top three, and I'm going to put that East Boston game there because that's a field I always drove by growing up and I always wanted to play on. So being able to play there and get a win under the lights on a Friday night early in the season in April of senior year, that was awesome. That'll be my number three moment. So championship, the win in Salem sophomore year, and then playing at Excel senior year as well. So kind of got everything covered there. Sophomore year, winning the championship, and then the play at third base, and then, you know, senior year as well at senior day, and then that game at Excel. What about you, though?
Again, number one obviously has to be our championship. Like, granted, we beat that team in, like, first couple innings, but winning a championship is definitely, like, it's the best part. Like, I remember freshman year when we lost and it was like so unfortunate. Like the seniors we had on our team then, Jimmy, Mike, Alex, like all those guys, like Chris, like dude, we had a crazy team then. And like we were definitely supposed to win, but like that hit. And then the following year to be like head down, we had the same mission and we carried it out this time. Like, mm-hmm. Holding a trophy, especially like, I wasn't the player. I was the manager, but to the team, I was a player.
You were on the roster. I said that. You were part of the winning. You were. I mean, yeah. You were there every game, every practice. Like you were part of the team. More than just a manager. Like, as I said, you were like a teammate to all of us.
Yeah. Like holding that trophy definitely was like the best feeling ever. Cause it's like you go into high school playing high school sports. You're like, am I ever going to win a championship? Then if you play that sport going to college, am I going to win a championship there? Mm-hmm. Like you never know if you'll ever get a championship in your life growing up. Mm-hmm. Like getting it in high school, it's definitely the cream of the crop. Cause it's like, you worked your behind off the whole season. Like it could have went left. It could have went right. But for us, we were like, all right, this year's our year. Like last year we got defeated. We shouldn't have lost. We made a silly mistake in the last game of the season. We changed it all up the next following year and we got it. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Number two. I would say number two would be playing at BC High, honestly. Cause that was a different field to play on. Like I wasn't used to that. Playing at BC High was definitely a different field. Like what was that? All turf?
Yeah, all turf. Big, they had stands too and stuff. So it was a little bit more hectic environment, which we ended up losing that game, which was tough, but that was going to be one of my top moments too. Not cause, which you obviously want to win the game, but it was also cool because we had so many people there supporting us because, you know, it's right down the street from BCCS. So, like, it was cool because we had, you know, a big-time crowd and stuff, big fields, right? Like, really nice UMass Boston plays there, BC High plays there. So a college team plays there, so it's a really nice field, well taken care of. Like, that was cool. Playing at Frazier Field in Lynn as well, that, like, semi-pro field where Lynn Academy used to play.
That's where we won our championship.
Tip Academy, yes. Yeah, it was nice. Like, it's cool. Salem State, too, we played at. Like, yeah, that's where we won, with Salem State, I think. But it was cool.
Yeah, we did win at Salem State.
But we did play at that Kip team that year. We played at Frazier Field, like, the year we won. So we played at some nice fields. But, yeah, BCI was a nice field, well taken care of. So that's one of your top – so your second one, and then
– and then third, honestly, I'll put senior day in my third one. Honestly, like, I didn't expect recognition that day, like, at all. Like, I'm going to keep saying it. I was just the manager. I was the guy who kept, like, the tallies in the books. Like, I came to practice. I was the hard guy if coach didn't want to be, like, a bum and be like, hey, this kid's late. And I'd be like, ah, God, now I got to deal with him. Okay, go run your laps that you missed. But honestly, getting recognition from, like, you, Kevin, the guys on senior day, like, definitely hit me because it's like, guys, you're the ones that are out there playing. I'm just here to encourage you to, like, be the hard coach in a way. But, like, just being there every day was, like, definitely fun. And then senior day, getting a flower and being acknowledged by everyone and, like, all the parents. Like, your mom obviously knew who I was. Most of the parents knew who I was. But, like, on that day, like, everyone knew who I was. Like, it wasn't just our fan section. It was like the other school, like, oh, this guy's like their manager. Like, he's not just a goofy kid that just does whatever he wants and like screams during like huge plays, but he actually like meant something to this team. So like,
he did. You're a legend. You are. I mean, hey, we look at BCCS Baseball Hall of Fame. You're in there. You're in there. I would agree. Senior day, right? Like, I didn't even think about that. Like, we all got the microphone. We all talked for a second. We all got, like, the flower and stuff. Like, it was cool. It was a cool ceremony. And getting a couple wins, too, was special. It was a nice way to end our time at Moakley, you know, regular season-wise. I know we had one more playoff game there after that. But it was nice to end it, you know, with two good wins there to end our time in high school. It was cool. I'm with you. It was a good one to pick. I'm with you. I'll ask you one more question, which it's kind of – similar to the, which I asked you, your top three, you know, moments, you know, during our time playing baseball. Now I'm going to ask you, it's similar, your top four favorite Boston athletes of all time. So your Mount Rushmore favorite Boston athletes. I asked Tommy DeVito that last week. I'm going to ask you it as well. I'll give my four and you can take a second to think about yours, which my four has definitely changed just over time. But my four last week when I talked with Tommy, it was Isaiah Thomas, Patrice Bergeron, Mookie Betts, and David Ortiz. Those are my four. It's honestly tough because I'm not a Patriots fan. Obviously, I'm a Giants fan. So picking among the other three teams, I know you'll have a Patriot in there, I'm sure. But it's tough to pick, right? We grew up obviously watching a lot of great Boston athletes. So it's not an easy one to pick, an easy question to answer. Just like top three moments, of our time, in high school, playing baseball. Just like that with this, it's not easy to pick four. But if you have your top four favorite athletes in Boston sports history.
All right. David Ortiz, obviously. Gotta love him.
That's your goat. That's your goat.
That is my goat. Kevin Garnett, honestly, he made me fall in love with the Celtics. Like, can't even lie, Kevin Garnett, 2008 parade, I can remember it to this day. I went to the parade not knowing I was going. My mom just told me, hey, bring your jersey, whatever. We're going on the train to go see your aunt downtown. Okay. End up at the parade, little old me in the front row wearing my KG jersey. He points at me best day of my life. David Ortiz, Kevin Garnett, Brad Marchand, missed that guy. Florida, you took him, but hey, you have a good one on your hands.
Yeah.
Then
you got a Patriot. I mean, it's tough to pick. You got Brady, you got Gronk, you got Edelman. It's not going to be easy for you here. Drake May.
Literally, I have so many guys I can pick from. But, you just named all offensive guys from the Patriots.
I did.
I'm giving you a defensive guy right now. Vince Wilfork.
Your guy.
Big Vince. Another guy that I met. Very nice, down-to-earth guy. I don't know. I always, wanted to play like him if I ever got to play football. It's bro, I just get to go after the quarterback or go after a player and just, boom, they're done. Once I lay a hand on them, they're most likely, going to be on the floor done. Vince Wilfork was definitely one of those ones. If I had to put an honorable mention just for an offensive purpose, I'd put Randy Moss out there.
Randy. All right. That's a good one. That's a good one. People would always think, I feel like Edelman or Gronk, thinking of someone that's making big time catches and stuff. But Randy, obviously him and Brady had a great connection, right? 27 touchdowns or whatever they had one year, 26 touchdowns or whatever. So they were really good. There was 27 touchdowns. So that's a good one though. I like that. I like that. It's very unique, right? It's different than mine too, which I think me, you, Tommy DeVito, we all had David Ortiz. You got to have Ortiz in there. He's got to be one of your top four Boston.
Best year 500, Boston. Bro had more than 500 home runs. Come on now.
I mean, he's a legend. Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Yeah. You need to pick him for what he meant to the city of Boston, too.
This is our city.
This is our city. Exactly. He's a legend. He's a legend. It would have been tough to not have him as one of your favorite Boston athletes, which it's tough. There are so many good ones. So it's not like we're picking out of, basically just six or seven or eight players. We're picking out of 1,000 great players that have played for our teams over our lifetime, right? So it's not easy. Not an easy choice. But I think we picked some good ones. I do. But anyways, Cliff, I'll let you go, my friend. Don't want to take up too much more of your time. But thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure being able to talk sports with you and hopefully have you on again soon. I'm wishing the Patriots and everyone out there that's watching, I'm wishing you guys the best of luck this weekend. Hopefully you guys get a win for your sake.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe. Good luck to the Giants next year. Hopefully the Clippers do something this year.
We'll see, right? Fingers crossed. I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much again for your time.
Yes, sir.
Take care now. Have a good one.
Love you too, buddy.
Love you, brother.